Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod and Mike Murphy.
Hello, hackaroos. It is that time, that sacred time. It's Hacksgiving. We're continuing our multi-year trend of lame sound effects here, but welcome. Happy Thanksgiving. I am Jive Turkey Mike Murphy, my old 70s radio disc jockey name, and with me is the pilgrim himself, Mr. Johnny Heilman. Hey, man.
Yo, gobble, gobble. When I heard those, when I heard the turkeys there, I had an image of Axe somewhere in the wilds of Michigan or Arizona or somewhere doing his thing he does now every Thanksgiving, which is he has the Sarah Palin shoving the turkey, putting the turkey into the wood chipper imitation. That's what I think is going on. That's my mental image right now.
Well, there's a rumor it's hair replacement this week and he's off. But anyway, the official lineman is on assignment. He's on assignment, covering the stories that only we can and the way we do. But we thought, we are the turkey kings. You got two of the three turkeys here. And there's a lot to talk about. So we're going to do a little Minnesota here. Now I want to just take a moment, though, to dispel the rumors. And I know you've heard them, Johnny, too, that we're only doing the Thanksgiving episode, because normally we take this week off because we've already sold advertising time and we'd have to refund the $185. That is a filthy lie. I don't know where it got started. We're here because we love you people.
It's a filthy lie. It's the biggest lie I've ever heard.
Biggest
liars. Fake news. Fake news. Enemies of the people. Enemies of the turkeys. Whatever.
It's a terrific show. Terrific. The best. Yeah. People say to me all the time, it's fantastic. Okay. Enough of our lame Trump imitations. What to start with? I think we probably have to start looking at the stock market this morning with the most beautiful word in the English language.
I've contemplated this question for a long time. Like, what, as a writer, Mike, I think about it. Like, I consult the dictionary, I consult the thesaurus. Right. I wonder.
You're a man of language, right?
I am a man of language. Words, as Hillary Clinton once said about Barack Obama, just words. I thought about it for a long time. And then I was listening to Joe Rogan when he did that long, long interview with Trump, a lot of words in there too. And Trump helpfully provided us all with certainly what he thinks is the most beautiful, glorious word in the English language. Let's just take a listen to that. It has some implications for what's going on today.
To me, the most beautiful word, and I've said this for the last couple of weeks, in the dictionary today, and any, is the word tariff. It's more beautiful than love. It's more beautiful than anything. It's the most beautiful word. This country can become rich with the proper use of tariffs.
Float out the idea of getting rid of income taxes and replacing it with tariffs?
Well, okay.
Were you serious about that?
Sure, but why not?
So there he was, Mike, Donald Trump, not only saying that tariffs are the most beautiful word in the English language, but he basically says tariffs will solve everything that's wrong, allegedly wrong with the American economy. And my favorite answer maybe of the whole campaign, which is when Rogan says, would you eliminate the income tax and replace it with all tariff revenue? Trump doesn't say yes, doesn't say no, says, why not?
Give it a try.
On so many levels.
Why not? It worked for King George,
Yes.
Why not?
There are a lot of economists who could give a lot of reasons why not, and they would give a lot of reasons why even the 25% he's proposing, or he's going to supposedly find emergency powers, slap 25% on Mexico, 25% on Canada, and an additional 10 on China. I think most economists could find about 100 reasons, like, why not?
Oh, it's so bad. We're an integrated economy in North America of Mexico, U.S., and Canada. It's kind of our base to compete in the world. It's one of our great competitive advantages. You just look at the automotive stocks today. He managed to take a few billion off them because your car is probably partially built in Mexico, designed in components at least, sometimes fully built in the U.S. and in Canada. I remember when Barack Obama, the White House press leaked, he had a Chrysler 300, kind of a cool, sassy car. Nobody figured out the thing was built in Windsor, Ontario.
It's integrated,
and this throws a huge monkey wrench into the whole machinery for everything, the raw materials, way beyond just the auto industry. It is moronomics.
The other thing about it, Mike, is that, this has been pointed out before, but it has to be pointed out again. Trump constantly says, and I know why. I'll throw this to you as the hack, as I'll propose the counter. If he was telling the truth, What Trump would have to say is, we are going to punish these countries we don't like by raising the prices of their goods in America so Americans will buy fewer of them, less of them, right? That's how tariffs work.
Right. And consumers pay more.
Consumers pay more.
It's a
right?
tax.
So they either buy less, they either buy less, or it's a tax. But the key thing here is that, and I know this is a political strategy show, not an economic show, but this is so basic. We pay the tariffs. We cannot, there's no slapping a tariff on China in China. American law doesn't work in China or Canada or Mexico.
Right.
It's not like he's going and like putting a tax on, like somehow delivering a bill to, to the Mexican branch of Toyota. He's, the only people we have control over are people within the United States. Our laws are domestic. So he really is just basically saying, I'm going to punish our foreign competitors by making Americans pay more for this good. And of course, that wouldn't necessarily. I can't imagine even you, with all your skill, could make an ad where I'm gonna raise your prices by 25% would be a winning message.
Well, I couldn't afford the editing equipment to make the ad because, of course, I'm going to be paying a massive tariff. Hey, kids, those laptops, those Apples going straight up, and they're retaliatory tariffs. You know, occasionally you have little mini tariff squabbles. You know, some country
targeted.
Won't let American strawberries in, so fine, we hit them on their cheese or whatever. It's a negotiation tool. But when you launch a big tariff war like this, everything costs more on both sides, and basically you create huge unemployment. So, in my heart of hearts, I think this is a mix of Trump stupidity and Trump trying to bluff. I'm going to scare them. You know, my comic friend Dana Gold has a great joke in his stand-up set where he says, you know, stupidest things you ever heard. And one of them is, and he adopts the persona of a moron. Okay, everybody, watch me scare the president, you know. And so that's what the tariff thing is.
I have a political question for you. Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why Trump won and a lot of reasons why Harris lost. And we've talked about them on the show. Others have talked about them endlessly. We'll be talking about them probably for years. But one of them clearly is it was inflation, right? The legacy of inflation, you know, people were sick of high prices. There's a lot of data that shows how important that was. What happens politically if Trump went through with this when for many, many, many of his voters, the thing was Trump's going to make, you know, we're sick of paying so much money for eggs and bacon and gas and everything else. What's going to happen politically? When does it bite politically if prices on a whole range of American goods go up within the first quarter of Trump's second term?
I think it could turn on him really quickly. We got a grumpy, wrong track electorate. They fired Biden. They fired Kamala for being connected to Biden. And Trump has raised expectations that now everything's going to be cheaper and it's going to be just like it was 4 years ago. Well, there's nothing you could do that would be faster and more effective to screw that up than a significant tariff war. So we will see. But this gets to, I think, a larger point. And then we're going to enter the Star Wars bar scene of the cabinet because there's plenty to talk about there. We've never had a three-headed, you know, Secretary of Labor before. But there was this thing after the election, you know, and we're all bitter and depressed because I'm one of these anti-Trump Republicans and Trump easily won. And we've talked about that a lot. But there was this kind of, I won't call it normie, but this thing of, well, he won fair and square. So, you know, all is kind of forgiven. And look at that. The Treasury Secretary nominee can eat with a knife and fork. So it's going to be okay. And I think part of that was Trump had vanished pretty much from the public. And then he comes up through the floorboards yesterday. Hey, I'm going to attack Canada. I'm going to wipe out their economy in Mexico and all this. And now you can feel the, hey, wait a minute. Maybe it is the same old Trump. We just forgot because he's out of the spotlight for a while. But there's kind of just been this Novocaine of numbness period.
Right.
And now he's acting like Trump again. People are like, well, wait a minute. It all happened. So I'm curious about that phenomena.
Well, I think like, you know, you've got a situation where look, I think you saw this with some of the cabinet picks too, obviously. Now, as you said, we're going to talk about the Star Wars bar, but like, I mean, as soon as you had that kind of Susie Wiles, Marco Rubio, those are reassuring normie picks, basically.
Yeah, we're in a world where Rubio looks like Kissinger, which tells you what they've done to the yardstick, but yeah.
Exactly right. But there is this tendency, and some people, it's like whistling past the graveyard of kind of like, it's all going to be fine. Don't worry, be happy. Bobby McFerrin, let's sing that song. Other people are just exhausted and are like, you know, this is one of the big challenges for Democrats and the left is, you know, that people are like, I'm tired of resisting. Like, I just want to go fucking, I want to take a long nap. I want to watch some football.
Right. Read a mystery novel. I'll bet sales are up. Just get us. By the way, Bobby Farron got Amtrak. Just came over the wire.
It's like, you know, I just want to take some time off. Call me in 2 years or 4 years when the next election comes around. And then there are people who are in the who are not in the don't worry, be happy camp, but in and not in the in the in the in the kind of exhausted camp, but in just kind of the natural look. It's kind of built into the system, right? Someone gets becomes president elect. They start to make cabinet choices. We have to cover those in journalism. We think,
right.
You know, even if you think Trump is a threat to democracy, there's still our responsibility is to cover those picks. So we cover them in the way that we know how to cover them, which is this person's been picked. Will there be the votes? And kind of in just talking about that in the way that we do, it is a normalizing thing because there is no other way to talk about
right.
it.
Right. That's insightful.
What's the Senate going to do? Does he going to get the vote?
There's no other vernacular. You have to call him Mr. Secretary, even if it's RFK Jr.
100%. And so that kind of is a natural thing. I do think that the cabinet picks were a shock to the system. I really do think that some of them, you know, the obvious ones, the RFK Jr., Pete Hegseth and Tulsi, the fact that Matt Gaetz is gone now is kind of a reassertion of some, like the Senate hasn't completely.
Yeah, that and Thune, you know, secret ballot, but they did go with the most normie choice on the menu.
But Trump still does seem to be, you know, I mean, we'll talk about Kash Patel in a second here, and there's Seth Gorka, and, you know, these people. I mean, these are bonkers, batshit picks, and they'll keep, he keeps doing those kinds of things along with the tariff thing and other things. He's going to be reminding people from now until January 20th that this is not going to be a normal or anything close to normal administration.
It's not even going to be last time. This is going to be, you know, Trump unleashed, the new Trump.
Soon there will be a kind of a treatment of the Trump first term. People will be remembering it the way they now look back on George W. Bush. It's like, wow, God, the days of Mad Dog Mattis and Henry McMaster. And
can we just ban Muslims? It was so much easier, and that was the craziest thing. Not the fact that we now have oil can fires outside shut down auto factories. Let's stop for a minute and listen to a word from one of our fine sponsors.
We're here in the holiday season now. Thanksgiving right around the corner. We've got Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, all that stuff, you know, is bearing down on us, which means not only do we have the holidays, we have a lot of holiday parties. And I don't know about you, but we're both follically challenged. You know, you show up at these parties and, you know, people are glad to see you, but you often get that look, you know, they kind of look at the top of your head and they're like kind of inspecting to see whether you're even bolder than you were the last time they saw you at like last Thanksgiving or last Christmas. It's not so great. We love the opportunity to get dressed up. We want to go out to these parties. We want to look our best, but everyone's just focused on our hair or our lack of hair. And that is why now is the perfect time to start Nutrafol.
It is, because Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand, trusted by over 1 million people. See thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. You know, thinning hair is different for men and women. So a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth just doesn't cut it. Get it? Little pun there. Nutrafol has multiple formulas for men and women that are tailored to different life stages, such as postpartum or menopause, and lifestyle factors, such as this does not apply to me, a plant-based lifestyle, so you can get just what you need.
Well, I'm hoping that postpartum and menopause don't apply to you either, Mike. But look, with the Nutrafol subscription, building a hair growth routine is simple. You purchase online, no prescription required, automated deliveries and free shipping keep you on track. Plus, you can save up to 20%, and you'll have access to free naturopathic doctor consults, and a Headspace membership is included.
So we all know the cold, dry air of winter can be unforgiving, but your hair doesn't have to suffer. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HACKS. Johnny, can you spell Nutrafol?
Oh, I sure can. Nutrafol, here we go. It's Nutrafol.com. Promo code HACKS. That's HACKS. That's Nutrafol.com. Promo code HACKS. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Go to that website, Nutrafol.com. Use the promo code HACKS, and you will understand all of the benefits of this incredible product.
Nutrafol.com, promo code HACKS.
Well, what do you think? What do you think in terms of the cabinet? But like, it's just you said the Star Wars bar scene. Talk about that a little bit. I mean, does the fact that Gates went down in the way that he went down, A, does it to you make you think the Senate now has its found? They didn't ever have to vote on this, but they made it pretty. Right. You know, the Senate's resistance to Gates was part of why Gates had to
right. Oh, totally. Up.
Do they now feel, well, we got that one without even having to really vote on it? Now we can go after Hegseth or go after Tulsi. And who is it if they go after someone?
My question has always been, how many of them can they stop? Because he's trying to swarm a bunch through. So how many magic beans do they have to, you know, get the worst dragons? So what intrigued me about it was there were two tells in all this. I wasn't surprised that Gates went down. I was surprised there wasn't a thundering Trump afterward. All right, you get one. I'm putting you on notice. I'll hold a rally in your state. Instead, Trump just kind of meowed like a kitten and it was over. That sent to me a good signal, I think, from a power point of view, a weak signal from Trump saying there's no consequence here. The other thing was Mitch McConnell 3.0 here, because he's no longer a leader.
He's YOLO Mitch.
Yeah. Turning to 26. And, you know, he was right there getting out the, I can just see him, Jasper, bring me a mint julep and my cutting knife. Because wham, he was one of the four right up there with Murkowski and everything.
Right. Yeah, totally.
So Mitch, who hates Trump for all the right reasons, you know, this is interesting. There's now a coalition that isn't as afraid of him. I mean, Collins, Trump going after her is a good thing for her. Same thing with Murkowski. Mitch is 2 years and made out of chrome, and it looks like he's ready to fight on some of the crazy stuff. So, and Trump didn't roar back, as I mentioned, to do anything. So I think there's a good chance they're going to clip a few more of them. And, you know, you've got others in kind of the national security wing, the Rich from Idaho, the Rounds from South Dakota. They're barking too, at least for regular hearings and all that, which is Senate talk for no, we're going to put you out there in the bristling acid and let you melt. So hopeful signs, but you know, even if they kill those, it means the win here is the really crazies or the really dangerous, flashy ones go, and the mediocrity and a few dangerous ideologues stay, like OMB, where VOD or VOTE or whatever his name is it means business, and that's a powerful agency.
Right. Here's you know, you think about there is this constituency, and McConnell is obviously part of this, on national security that is either traditional hawks or neoconish hawks or whatever, who I think are appalled by Hegseth and Tulsi.
Completely.
I think in some ways, like, I think neither one of them is qualified for the job. I think both of them deserve to be taken out. But I do think either unqualified or potentially insidious in Tulsi's case.
Yeah, particularly with her.
Pete Hegseth is so wildly unqualified to run a thing as big as the Pentagon. I have a feeling that, like, in a way, the DNI is one of these jobs that. The intelligence people care a lot about it, but normal Americans don't get what that is. I think a lot of normal Americans do understand that the Pentagon and the Defense Department is a big deal. And I think it's maybe easier to go after. If I had to guess, I would think that it would be easier for those that faction in the Senate, Republican senators, to focus on Hegseth than to focus on Gabbard, because it is just so much more of a high profile and more legible job to a lot of Americans.
Like, no, I think you're right about that.
2.8 million employees. We understand that bombs, bullets, nuclear chain of command, like all of that stuff makes sense to people. DNI is a coordinating job where you sit at the center of all the other.
Right. What is that? The Coast Guard? Yeah. Yeah. I agree. The other thing about DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, was created to better integrate all our our intelligence agency, of which we have many, that kind of were like cats that wouldn't march. And it was part of the post 9/11 stuff. I think because, you know, CIA used to be cabinet level. Now it's under DNI. And there's still institutional fractures about all that. If she becomes DNI, none of the subordinate agencies are going to trust her. And she'll get isolated there.
Nor Five Eyes, nor the allies.
Right, right. No, exactly. All the people we share a lot with. So right. It'll become island DNI, I think, in the biggest bureaucratic war of all time. Because there are right. A whole lot of career people who make great sacrifices to work in those agencies. And they're not going to trust her. I wouldn't. It's going to be a mess.
I was just going to ask you about one other category of thing here. Because the Bobby Kennedy Jr. thing is another question. Yeah. But here's the, you know, when you said Star Wars bar, I immediately thought Seb Gorka and Kash Patel. Now, you know, Seb Gorka is going to be inside the White House. That's not Senate confirmable. We don't know where Kash Patel is going to go, but there's been a lot of talk about some senior job, either at CIA or FBI. And I got to say, of all these people, the one who's been most someone who has actually had a senior government position previously, Kash Patel did. He's been most vocal over the last couple of years in speaking openly about like retribution against journalists, against the deep state, against, you know, the people who've gone after Trump, the prosecutors who have tried to prosecute him. And he, you know, he and Bannon have said some incredible things on the air about this. And some of you can say, who cares about Steve Bannon? He's got a podcast. Who, you know, what's the difference? But Kash Patel might be at the CIA, at a senior level of the CIA or a senior level of the FBI. Here's this thing he said not that long before the election, where he was talking about what he would do to the FBI if he were running it.
And the biggest problem the FBI has had has come out of its intel shops. I'd break that component out of it. I'd shut down the FBI Hoover building on day one and reopening the next day as a museum of the deep state. And I'd take the 7,000 employees that work in that building and send them across America to chase down criminals. Go be cops. You're cops. Go be cops. Go chase down murderers and drug dealers and violent offenders. What do you need 7,000 people there for? Same thing with DOJ. What are all these people doing here? Looking for their next government promotion, looking for their next fancy government title, looking for their parachute out of government. So while you're bringing in the right people, you also have to shrink government.
So there it is. Mike, what do you think about the idea of shutting down the Hoover building and turning it into a museum of the deep state?
Yeah, no. That to me is the scariest part of all this. Not the buffoons,
right.
But the ideologues who have some idea how government works, who have madcap ideas they've been keeping in their secret Franco room in the basement. And now they're going to be they're toddlers with machine guns, but they have some competence. And they believe this stuff. The OMB guy, I'm sorry, I think it's James, it's either vote or rot. It is an experienced bureaucrat, worked on the Hill and everything, and is, let's just say, has a lot of cataracts about what America is. And OMB is very powerful. They're the super bureaucracy behind the bureaucracy. And a guy like Patel inside the wherever, I think Radcliffe and some of the national security people who are a little more normie in the Trump world, who got CIA, which they could have done worse. I mean, again, this is the theme of the times. Yeah. Could have done worse, I guess. Did Mussolini have a kid? Where is he? You know?
Yes.
It's very troubling because there do some danger. Now, I am of the theory that Trump wins, and you know how journalism works. There has to be a genius hero. So now Trump is the genius hero. It might not just be fire Biden over the price of bananas. So now Trump's going to come in with this superstar team of villains. I think it might be a superstar team of squabbling incompetence, and the whole thing could collapse, particularly if Trump starts real economic pain quickly through his addled incompetence. So this thing could crack up faster than people think, but you have to plan for the downside scenario, which is they hold it together and some of these people ply their trade, so to speak. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the mass deportation stuff. You know, I mean, you can go down every agency, although I go back to 1995 on abolishing Department of Education because it really doesn't do anything federally. You could block grant all that money. But, you know, that used to be the wild idea. Now that's the soft idea among this crowd. You also, Elon, don't save any money getting rid of DOE.
I don't like, of all the things to worry about right now, and again, all due respect to the DOE, people who work at DOE.
We should say Department of Education. I guess DOE is energy, so right, we're screwing
the
up.
The Department of Education, a very dedicated public servants trying to make schools better in America, but the truth is we control schools at the local and state level.
Right, exactly. I've had two friends who had that job, and they're both like, doesn't do
right.
a lot.
It's not like the DOE, it's not like the Department of Education decides like what the curriculum is going to be in your child's high school, okay? That's not how it works.
And thank God for that.
That's yes. Thank God for that. Well, I'm not sure that I've seen a really good set of bureaucrats who are good at making those decisions at any level, but that's not the problem. The thing of the weaponization of the Justice Department, because they have so much power, you know,
yeah,
if you get a bunch of ideologues at the Justice Department and in the intelligence communities, people who have the ability to spy on you, people who have the ability to get into your tax records, people have the ability to, if you want to mete out punishment, those are very dangerous agencies that can do a lot of terrible shit. And to hear people saying things, you know, the mayor of Denver yesterday, Mike, I think you raised mass deportation. I don't want to go off on a huge tangent about this, but I think you and I agree. The politics of trying to carry this out beyond, you know, it's connected to the substance and the reality of it. But if you try to carry it out on a large scale, the political risks are enormous. And then you hear the mayor of Denver say, I'm not going to take part in this.
Right, right. Oh, the whole state of any blue state, same deal.
And you hear the Trump people say, fine, well, then we'll just arrest you. And I it's loose talk, you know, will they ever try to go through with it? It is loose talk, and they may never try to go through with it. But just the idea that that's their mind frame going in, which is like to start just, they were very casually tossing around the kind of terminology that
I totally agree.
I'm like broken record. It's the kind of language that you hear and you can easily kind of laugh it off. Well, they'll never do that. And you're like, I don't know.
Well, the problem is if you start, so the FBI, I was talking to somebody from a totalitarian government once, one of their wine and cheese, you know, drinking
one of ambassador your clients?
Types. No. That would be, what was that lobbyist in D.C. who had all the retrobates around the world? Oh, they posted a great story.
Paul Manafort?
No. He made Manafort look like Mother Goose. What was his name? He literally had the, it was like Von Kloberg. He had, of course, a Von in his name. Anyway, and I was joking about how totalitarian regimes work, you know, and one of the things that is a feature is plainclothes national police who can go arrest anybody, anywhere, and don't wear a uniform.
It's the Stasi.
Right, but he would, yes, like your FBI, because we do have a plainclothes national federal police. Right. Now, we keep it under very tight wraps, and it has a very, I believe, a very good culture. That's the kind of thing you can't lose, but you appoint the right clown there, and what'll happen is there'll be a huge internal resistance, but it's dangerous. One, opportunity cost, they get off the normal stuff they're supposed to be doing, which is really important, not just national security and counterintelligence, but, you know, organized crime, everything else they do. But you don't want to corrupt that culture because on paper, they have a lot of power. And so the idea of a bad rogue Justice Department, or at least bad rogue leadership, again, I think the rank and file would revolt. It is very, very scary with the FBI being right in the middle of that. And of course, Trump, who take everything, every bad hardball instinct, we're going to get mail for this, but I'll say it, that Bobby Kennedy has, and put it on crazy steroids and try to use the FBI as a personal get even thing. And Nixon had a whiff of this too. And then you get into the world of tax audits and all that. It's really bad. So
it's really bad. It's really potentially bad. It's the thing we really have to keep an eye on.
We'll be right back with Hacks on Tap.
As a man who understands the value of sleep, someone who for a long period of time had not had really a good night's sleep since like the mid-1980s, I suddenly realized I had needed to get more sleep. I had a hard time settling into that routine. And the thing that helped me most to get back on some kind of a decent sleep schedule was the Helix mattress. And I am saying, man, I did not think I could be this comfortable. I did not think I could feel as good. I didn't think I could not get such a good night's sleep, having had so much difficulty with it for so long. But Helix solved my problems. Once I got a Helix mattress, I was like, Valhalla, baby. And now you hear this energy level I'm bringing to the show and to this ad? That's due to Helix mattress.
Yeah, you and Axelrod are fanatics for this thing. And I'll tell you, our young daughter was waking up in the middle of the night and coming in, knocking on the door, which means I'm waking up. My wife is waking up. Everybody's waking up. So I finally took a little of the Axelrod sauce last year, and we got the Helix Kid mattress, and it works. She loves it. It's incredible. So this thing works. I mean, Axe is a tough sale, but you go to a cocktail party and you say, gee, what do you think the future of the Democratic Party is? And he won't shut up about the Helix mattress. Drives people crazy. That's right. There is a incredible offer now. By the way, you go on the Helix site, they kind of dial in the mattress. They have a lot of cool tech to make sure you get a good mattress for you.
For your sleeping style, for your body type, all of these things. You basically are making a custom mattress for your body, and that makes all the difference because a lot of times the mattress sucks. It's just uncomfortable. On a best occasion, you're like, I don't really notice my mattress. The Helix mattress, when it's designed custom for you, you like are wake up the next day and go, oh, thank you, Helix.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Helix. All right. So guess what? We have an incredible offer for you, Hackaroos. But first, if you're on a Helix mattress right now, wake up and listen. You might want another one. You can get 25% off site-wide plus 2 free Dream Pillows. They're great, they're comfortable, and they don't have political opinions either. All of this, 2 free Dream Pillows with any mattress purchase.
And don't miss out on the free bedding bundle, which includes 2 of those Dream Pillows Mike was just talking about, a sheet set, and a mattress protector when you order a Luxe or Elite mattress. So make sure as soon as this ad is over, you go and visit Helix Sleep. That's all one word, helixsleep.com/hacks to find your perfect mattress today.
helixsleep.com/hacks. Take the quiz, get the mattress. Easy as that.
Just because we promised our listeners this episode, and we also promised them, as you believe you called it, a mini episode, a minisode? Is that what you called it?
Minnesota, one of our top rated states.
Right, a minisode for Minnesota. We want to turn the corner here, I think, and ask, yes. And address our last topic, which is relates to the other side of the aisle.
Yeah, the Democrats.
As we head into Thanksgiving, Mike, how do you think the loyal opposition is looking right now? It's got a DNC election's going to happen after the first of the year, but we're starting to see who the contestants are there.
Well, I understand they've called the whole, in the wake of the defeat, they've called the entire Democratic apparatus together, and they're having a mass, they're all coming together to make dream catchers. So, you know, we're getting ready to really, really pivot and get out of the woke stuff, and we're going to teach everybody a lesson. You know, the DNC fight so far is uninspiring. From my point of view, as somebody who would like to stop Trumpism, then I can go back to being a Republican again, I hope. Rahm Emanuel's obvious. But instead, you got a whole bunch of tier B candidates jumping out, which is proof, one, that old politicians, the Martin O'Malley's of the world, don't lose their ambition. And by the way, don't mention The Wire to him. Apparently, he goes crazy, which, of course, is, you know, the best pop art to come out of Maryland in 50 years.
Well, it's not a super flattering portrayal of him, and his doppelganger in that is not a super flattering thing. I understand it.
Well, yeah, but he you know, he thinks it's about him. You know, I think maybe you're not that big, Martin. But anyway, not inspiring. You got Max Rose, who's kind of interesting. He served one term in Congress from a Republican district he captured through sheer grit. Afghanistan war veteran, kind of an interesting character, but you know, a one-term member of Congress who lost 2 comeback attempts doesn't strike me as super home run hitter, although I think his instincts are pretty good in politics. And then there's the committee person from somewhere running. So, you know, considering we're looking for a General Marshall or General Patton here, and I'm seeing a lot of Buck Privates other than Emanuel, and apparently there's a limited groundswell for him, which is a bad tell. I think the other thing to worry about is historically, the odds with this narrow margin the R's have in the House, the odds that the Democrats can take it back in the midterms in 2 years and get the checkbook are really high. But even if they get out the dream catchers and Bernie and Power to the People and new songs and, you know, make Stacey Abrams, apparently now has taken herself out of it, the last week's whispered DNC answer, which, of course, is exactly the wrong thing to do ideologically, they could win anyway and get all the wrong ideas and blow another presidential election, and then you get Vance or God knows who. So I'm worried about that. The democracy is now too important for the Democratic Party internal world to be in charge of, and I'm hoping they wake up.
Well, listen, here's going to be my controversial take for the day. I don't really give a shit. I think that the chairman of the chairman, chairwoman, chairperson of the DNC is there's never been a time when the party chairmanship has mattered less. Our politics, you know, the Democratic Party is now more or less democratic institution in the sense that, you know, we don't have the old smoke filled back rooms.
Alas,
the funding of the party has now been privatized. I think that who heads the DTRIP, the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee.
Well, that's the point. Yeah.
That matters a lot. I think who runs the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee matters a lot. I think that the chairmanship of the party or chairwomanship, chairpersonship, whatever, I think has never been less relevant now I do think, I understand. I love Rahm.
Let me just interrupt for a sec, because I just want to answer that, and then you can talk about Rahm.
Go ahead.
I'm going to buck for a job in the Rubio State Department here by saying I agree and disagree at the same time.
Oh, very good.
Which is, when I say DNC, I mean a party supremo. I mean D-Trip.
Yeah.
I tried to talk Axelrod into making a run for the D-Trip. That didn't work. Right. And the senatorial committee is less important because the map is so bad, but it's still really important. So I want one generalissimo in charge of all their party committees to do the midterm election. So I fundamentally agree. You. Organizationally, yeah, if you get a knucklehead at DNC, you can go around that and just have the D-Trip be the island of sanity, but they need to up all that game tremendously. And that's what I'm not seeing, at least yet.
I agree. And look, here's the thing though. I mean, in a period when you don't have the White House, the Senate or the House, again, this is kind of old thing. It's like, well,
yeah, nobody's in charge.
Nobody's in charge. And then, in the old days we would say, well, who's going to go on the shows? You know, it's like, and nobody gives a shit about the shows anymore, but you would be like, oh, the DNC chair at this moment in a vacuum would become the spokesman for the party, would go on Meet the Press and would make it.
Yeah. Going to make news on Meet. Right.
Right. And now that's kind of a bygone day. I will say I love Rahm, and I think Rahm's been a great leader for the party, and I'm progressives don't like him. I don't care. I think Rahm is really smart and always has been really smart and has a good vision for the party. I do think that I understand when there are people in the Democratic Party who look back on that period when it was, hey, our leadership is Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn, Joe Biden, and everyone's over 80, and like Chuck Schumer in his mid 70s is the spring chicken. That still is the odor around Democrats. Old, and again, we are old white guys, you and me, but I can understand why some people in the party think maybe someone a little like not, quite as old as Rahm, not an old white guy.
Oh yeah, I get it. I get it.
Maybe someone who's in the right place ideologically, Mike, if you could find somebody, if there was someone like Jared Polis, who I'm not going to take this job, but a someone who's a little bit younger in the right place ideologically to try to do what the party really needs to get done ideologically, but who seems a little bit more in touch with the median voter in terms of like where he sits on the age and the age continuum.
Yeah, my thing is I want one campaign supremo with a big gun to put at heads to bring order, to get the army whipped together to maximize. There's the larger question of what they stand for and everything else. There's the optical. I don't care who's on Meat.
Right. Who's on the Meat? Who's on the Meat?
There still is Meet the Press. But I do care a lot about there being one general combined forces who knows what to do, and that's Rahm Emanuel, in my view. Time to pay the meter, but we will be right back. Now, let's hear from our sponsor. Johnny, like a lot of people, my dad and a lot of friends, one of my podcast partners who will remain nameless, is just not the most tech savvy. The third hack tried to get me to help him get on MySpace the other day. I'm telling you, just not his gift. He has a lot of other gifts. But I'll tell you what a gift that I want to give him, because it's perfect. It's the Aura Digital Frame, because while it's very high tech, it is incredibly easy. A really good chimp could do it no problem.
Well, that's perfect for Axelrod, because he's not totally tech unsavvy, Mike. He told me the other day he's finally mastered MS-DOS. But even Ax can deal with Aura frames. What's great about these frames is that they are, first of all, they're stylish. Second of all, they're unobtrusive. I like an unobtrusive frame, stylish, clean lines. And the main thing is that you can take all of your pics that you have, you upload them, you display them in the Aura frames, but you can also share your pictures of your family vacation that were taken the very day. You go out and go out with your family, you're taking the pictures, you come back, you ship them off to everyone who was on the vacation and anyone who you want to have to share the vacation with, who's in your family or extended family or friends. People try to, in the old days of getting pictures, having to take the film in and get it developed, and then you've got the prints, and who are you going to send the prints to? How are you going to share them? This gets rid of all of that, Mike.
It does.
It's easy as 1, 2, 3.
I walk down the street and often people come up to me, hey, Mike, why did Wirecutter, Tough Critics, name Aura the best digital photo frame? And I said, it's simple. There are no memory cards or USB cables required. None of that stuff. You get a digital frame so it can sit there and show all these great pictures. You load them into your app, which is how we all do photography now. You push a couple of buttons and shebang, you got this automatic picture frame for the people you love, putting the pictures in there that you want with no tech hassle at all. It is so simple, so cool.
And if you, hey, also, if you get sick of the pictures, you know, yeah, sometimes it happens. You frame a picture, you look up and then you decide, actually, don't like that guy or whatever. I've seen enough of that grandchild. I want to, you know, to replace him with a new grandchild, whatever. Just to push a button, hit it on the app, change them out. You can rotate those pictures on the frames.
For a limited time, there's a great offer at AuraFrames.com. What is it?
$45 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames. All you got to do is use the promo code HACKS at checkout. It's AuraFrames.com with the promo code HACKS. 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 This is an exclusive Black Friday Cyber Monday deal. It's the best deal that they've done all year long. It's an incredible deal, $45 off, so don't miss out. Terms and conditions do apply. So here's the last question, which is, I think you I think will agree with me about this. In reality, the leader of the Democratic Party is going to be ultimately its presidential nominee in 2028. We don't know who that is for a while. So there's already a very active, you can already see the field, the 2028 field forming.
Yeah, I know. There's polling out now. Meaningless polling.
You had all these Democrats who really wanted Kamala Harris to win because they wanted to stop Trump. But they also thought, well, if she loses, you know, if she wins, it's going to be kind of a problem for me. She could be president for 8 years. What's going to happen to my career? The fact that she lost means that the door is now open to a whole bunch of people. And I ask you, without going too far down this path, you know, Gavin Newsom clearly getting ready to go, Bashir getting ready to go. I think Josh Shapiro, like, you see them stirrings among some of them, some who are not stirring as much as people might have thought. I don't see that much stirring going on from Gretchen Whitmer right now. Maybe she's just biding her time. You don't see any like really obvious stirring going on in some other quarters. Who do you imagine? And then there's the Kamala Harris question, which will,
right,
which,
big, you know,
has, yeah, been put front and center. She's got to make a decision shortly here because she has two options. Well, three if she decides to just get out of politics, but I don't think that's going to happen. She's either can run for governor in California in 2026 or she can run for president again in 2028. A lot of people will say the latter is a completely off the board. They don't want her to run again. I think, you know, she must be thinking about it. What do you think how do you think she makes that decision between governor in 26 and president again in 28? And what do you think of the broader question as you see the movements out there in the shadows, and sometimes not so much in the shadows, of various Democrats starting to get ready to gear up to run?
Well, I'll start with what I think the rules of gravity are, which are the early thing, almost more important to think about than which candidate is going to the Lincoln Day in New Hampshire or the JJ Day or Indigenous People's Day or whatever they call it now on the Democratic side. The first law of gravity is nobody knows anything. The second law is early polls don't matter. They're all name ID. And then third law is vacuums get filled. So I think everybody's going to run. But maybe the most important law is you got to look, particularly in the Democratic side, at the primary calendar. And the Biden people got out the chainsaw and made a lot of changes. If you can put African Americans and white liberals together, you can probably get nominated. So you can't rule out Kamala. I think she's got a lot of candidate problems, and being a loser, it could be the Bob Dole scenario. You were vice president and you lost by a hair, then you run and you get zero votes. So I think a lot will run. I would keep an eye on Whitmer. I keep an eye on Newsom, who's going to try the California savior thing, and he's out picking Trump fights, and he'll be good at that, and he has a base. He performs well on television. You know, we could go down the whole list. I think a lot of them are going to run. They're really going to run in the preseason, so we're going to have this big midterm beauty contest of who's the best surrogate and who can claim the most credit. A bunch of them will raise a bunch of money and do ads, and, you know, it's going to be the biggest midterm pre-presidential thing ever, particularly if Trump starts to implode and they can just taste the opportunity. So I don't see a commanding front runner, but boy, I would want to be able to attract African-American votes either by being a credible African-American candidate or having a special appeal just based on the math of the new calendar, which is not as white liberal heavy. The Biden people literally designed this thing for a more Kamala-like candidate to do better before, you know, he imploded. As far as the California governor thing, it's interesting. So, you know, it's a country really big. We're going to have an open seat. Gavin's going to be done.
Yeah. And almost certainly running for president, which is not unimportant in this calculation.
Right. Not at all. You know, he, I think, is totally zeroed in on that. And I think he's going to try to be the leader of the Trump opposition. He did kind of a cute thing the other day. He announced it was a mix of smart policy and craven politics. He said, well, since Trump wants to wipe out the auto industry and get rid of EVs by killing the $7,500 subsidy, I'm going to do one in California because, you know, we're selling one out of four cars now as electric. And except not for Teslas, which, of course, is right. The only car right. company that manufactures in California. Right. So right. So even Elon blew his stack on Twitter over that. So what are the dynamics of the 26th race here? Well, first of all, we don't have traditional primaries. We're top two. So everybody runs on one ballot and a top two finish. So you could get two Democrats in a new world that doesn't exist. You could have two Republicans. So generally, right. it boils down to a three-way dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, does a crankcase Republican get into second with very little money and the Democrat walks in, which is what happened with Adam Schiff and Garvey? Schiff even spent millions of dollars to elevate Garvey to beat all the other Democrats, so he didn't have to have a runoff against Katie Porter, who was the number two Democrat. Or do you get a center Democrat who can edge out the electrify the border Republican and then make the top two between kind of a center Democrat and a more left labor-based Democrat? So a lot of people jockeying for different positions. Will Kamala jump in and try to be the big Megillah? You know, I don't know if her base, the early polls would say, go, Kamala, go. But I don't know if when other choices are on the menu, if she'll stay strong. She, you know, very factionalized here. She's never been that popular with the bosses either in California. She doesn't get along with Karen Bass here, who's the mayor of L.A. So attractive. She'd be super credible, but I don't think it would be a complete cakewalk.
Well, I don't know about a complete cakewalk. I'll just briefly say two things. One, the person who will definitely be voted would definitely be on her side and probably, you know, I could imagine some kind of in-kind contribution of like a vast amount of really expensive wine or other things. Gavin Newsom has got to be praying that she runs for governor, because the last thing Gavin Newsom needs is to have a second California person running in the same primary with him for president in 2028. It's hard enough to become the Democratic nominee if you're conceived as a California liberal. Try to do it when you're running against the previous nominee who is another California liberal. Gavin's like got to be begging Harris to get in, and I think California native. We both have our different angles on the state. I just think that if Harris runs and puts herself in the governor's race, she's the prohibitive favorite in that race. She's the prohibitive favorite. She's won the Senate. She's done it before. Her profile's higher now.
Yeah, but this is new loser Kamala Harris. I don't know.
I agree. I'm not saying she's unbeatable. I'm just saying if that's a much easier path. If she wants to stay relevant in American politics and her two choices are governor of the seventh largest economy in the world or take another shot at the Democratic nomination in 2028, I mean, the governorship is a way easier path.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. If she thinks she can win the governorship here fairly easy and play the long game, that'll be an attractive argument to her. I think she'll have more trouble here than that, but I think she'll have a lot of trouble nationally. You know, from Gavin's point of view, I'm not sure I agree. I can argue either side of it. You make a good argument. The other argument is, as a California candidate, a Northern California candidate, just like she was. She was from Oakland. He had been mayor of San Francisco. The last thing he needs is her reminding anybody of that. And you know, the contrast between him, I'm future California, she's past California in a presidential race, she might fizzle. Their bases don't overlap much, and we're not a primary state. We don't matter. So you know, you kind of got to think of it from the FOIL point of view, what's better for him. I think he wishes she'd go take over the Rockefeller Foundation or something and go away, because he's got to shake that stigma of national Democrats saying, oh, you're kidding. You know, Jerry Brown, Kamala Harris, how many California disasters can the party take in national politics? But by the way, a quick plug. There's a great political reporter here in California named Alex Michelson. He's got a good weekend show on the Fox Broadcast Networks. It's not a Fox show. It's straight down the middle called, God, I'm forgetting the name. You can look him up, E-L-E-X Michelson. Anyway, he did a great interview. There's a podcast and a video version with Jerry Brown last week. I retweeted it. It's really good. Brown is so smart and still sharp at like 86 or whatever he is. And it was a very savvy take on politics. I highly recommend it. Alex Michelson. And The Issue is the show, Jerry Brown interview.
I would say that Jerry Brown is the one of all the people I've ever covered. He's the one that I would think would have been the most interesting person I've ever covered if he'd actually gotten to be president of the United States.
I agree.
Now, where's the gobble? Let's hear the gobble one more time.
See, we are limited in budget, as you, any of our listeners can tell.
That's our signal that we've gone already past what a minisode would require. I have a lightning round for you on Thanksgiving. These are one word answers, and there is a right answer and a wrong answer to each one of these questions.
All right, pressure's on. Here we go.
Related to Thanksgiving. Okay. Here you go. When it comes to Thanksgiving dinner, white meat or dark meat?
Dark meat.
Correct. Stuffing cooked inside the bird or outside the bird?
Inside.
Correct. Oysters in the stuffing or no oysters in the stuffing?
Hell no, I'm not a communist.
Okay, that one I actually happen to agree with you on that, although I love oysters. Cranberry sauce made fresh or from the can?
Oh, fresh. If you can, a lot of work, so it's always the can.
Ocean Spray says the can with the little ridges on the side of the can. Just dump it out there.
They make that in the same factory where they do STP motor oil in New Jersey. A little trivia.
Well, that's another one of my favorite condiments is the STP motor oil. And finally, pumpkin pie or apple pie?
Apple pie. I'm American.
Oh, dear God. Pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving, my friend. I love apple pie.
Oh, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. The country's with me.
I love apple pie. I love apple pie, but pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving.
So I have one question for you. Have you ever done the deep fry thing where you burn down the garage?
I have deep fried a turkey. I have cooked a turkey almost every way you can possibly cook a turkey. I did not burn down the garage because, and this is my parting shot here, if anybody ever considers deep frying a turkey, go on the internet and find the video that William Shatner made with my friend Griffin Hammond, who shot it, of how to deep fry a turkey without burning down the garage. It is hilarious. He is clearly drunk as a skunk, and it's been viewed like a billion times on YouTube. William Shatner, how to deep fry a turkey. That is my Thanksgiving gift to you and all our listeners.
I had lunch with Shatner once, one of my favorite Hollywood experiences at the Paramount when I had my office there. And A.C. Lyles, this legendary producer, came over, and Shatner was kind of cranky because he had to drive in pitching a show. And there were some kind of smirking young Hollywood types at the next table, and Shatner kind of felt them, and it was irritating. And old A.C. Lyles in his perfect suit, you know, started with Cagney, walked over, still crisp, silver-haired, you know, old producer type, and said, "Don't let them bug you, Bill. You built the effing place." Shatner was a hoot. We did it once, and we didn't burn anything down. The turkey was delicious, but we have an oil stain in our garage about as big as a Volkswagen Beetle. In the concrete,
right, and that will never come out.
Yeah, well, there's a story. I always say, that's where we lost Jasper, my uncle, who didn't read the Shatner video or watch it on YouTube to know how to do this. Because the problem is water and boiling oil don't mix, my friends.
The only question I have is as large a stain as the stain of running Jeb Bush's super PAC in 2012.
Okay, going. We're in a good holiday mood, and you have to. All right. Yeah.
Love you, bro.
I love you too. Have a great Thanksgiving and a grateful thanks on this giving to all our Hackaroo listeners. I know I speak for Axe too. Thank you so much for giving us part of your precious time to listen to We Three Turkeys gobble on week after week. We really enjoy it, and we're very grateful to all of you. So, you know, here's my Thanksgiving. I'm putting on my pilgrim hat now. Find somebody you disagree with politically and tell them something you're thankful for that you share with them. Let's try a little of that.
That's a sweet idea. America needs more of that.
So much more. A little more kindness.
America needs more Mike Murphy, at least the spirit of Mike Murphy. There we go.
Not what the MSNBC ratings say, but thank you, my friend. Enjoy that turkey.
Gobble, gobble.